coming to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy whose vibes are always a little bit off. I am Rob Sesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And today we're going to be talking on our recap podcast with Xander Hastings, who is a fellow member of the Third Place Club, very exclusive club. And so Xander played in season 41, and he will, I'm sure, have a lot to say about what he's seeing in season 42. So really glad that we finally have gotten the chance to talk with Xander a little bit more and hear what he is thinking about everything going on here in season 42. And of course, happy to have you here with us. Of course, if you are listening and not subscribed to Rob as a Podcast, what are you even doing? Go to robaswebsite.com/subscribe to make sure you don't miss any of the podcasting coming your way. Earlier today, I had the chance to talk to Swathi. Had a very nice exit interview with Swathi. Talked about what was going on over at the Ika Tribe. I highly suggest you check that out. And of course, you can see the video on our YouTube channel at robhaswebsite.com/YouTube, where, of course, you could also watch the video of this conversation coming up here with Xander. Plus, we've got the Survivor Feedback Show coming up with Ali Lasher, of course, the co-host of our Challenge Wrap Up podcast. Should be a lot of fun to talk to Ali and get your feedback questions in at robiswebsite.com/voicemail. And then for the patrons of Rob's Podcast, I'll be talking with Matt Scott on the Academy, where we have a focus on future players of the game and what they need to be learning from each week's episode of Survivor. Matt Scott will join me for that. Of course, April is a great time to become a patron. robiswebsite.com/patron. All right, everybody, I am very excited to have this guest here with us to talk about the most recent episode of Survivor and everything going on Survivor 42. Of course, we got to see him play in the new era in last season of Survivor, in Survivor 41. And here he is to talk about all things Survivor. Please welcome in the great Xander Hastings is here. Xander, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here. It's also great to watch a season that I'm not on.
Yes. It
feels really liberating.
How is that?
Yeah, it's pretty great. You know, I've been enjoying watching, like, it's fun as like a science experiment. There's almost like a control element in the fact that the same advantages have shown up. So it's interesting for me as someone who interacted with a lot of those twists to see how other people are dealing with those twists.
Must be very bizarre. I'd love to talk about all that. I see you are highlighting your, I liked what you said about RHAP shirt. I think, I don't know if we sold any of those, but we at least got one to Xander.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'll definitely be throwing it up on the gram later.
Yes. Okay. Thank you for being here with us. I wish that we got a chance to talk more after season 41. I just thought that you were a great sport about everything and really have been looking forward to getting the chance to talk to you here today. So thank you so much for being here with us. Before we talk Survivor 42, what have you been up to since the season?
So I actually have been taking time off of school to work on app development, hence my title, which I don't get to choose the title. A lot of people have asked me that, whether or not I get to choose college student or app developer. But, you know, I was really happy with that they went with that because I feel like that is like something I'm very passionate about. I've always been super into art and design, elements, composition, color, and I have a knack for like scientific mathematic things. So I thought I'd combine those two into computer science and app development. And recently I'm working on releasing like my first full scale app. I've been doing everything by myself in Google's language Flutter, and I'm a couple days away from finishing the thing. And it's been a long time coming. I got the idea for it like before I even went on the show. I started coding before I went on the show, drawing up mockups, and to see it all come together and like it's just like it feels like my masterpiece. It's my baby. I'm like really happy. I pulled two all-nighters this week. I'm like, you know, I just want to like power through it and get it done. It's almost like, you know, I'm getting into that Tony kind of energy and yeah,
no sleep, like, right?
No sleep. Yeah, I don't need anything to eat. It's just like I'm focused, blinders on. I want it done. And it's pretty fitting with Survivor too. It's all about games. You know, I love competition. I love competing. And it's all about like elevating the competitive experience, the social experience of it. When we play games, we create communities, but it goes away when we're not playing with those communities. And, you know, we've seen how video games are starting to take over. I feel like board games and in-person games and in-person fun is kind of a dying industry. So to, you know, elevate that experience and connect people back to playing games, I want to make it easy to communicate, easy to find places to play games, people to play with, keep track of your scores, and make it like a social fun experience to play games and win games.
Yeah, well, I think that that's something that this Survivor community can certainly appreciate. So best of luck with what you're doing there. Xander, remind me, were you originally going to play in Survivor 41 in March of 2020, or were you somebody who got in later?
I was really lucky. I applied actually the day of the season 40 finale because I had made my video. And then Jeff, after the finale, says, "We're looking for young players. If you're young, apply now."
Oh.
And also when I saw it, I panicked. I was like, no, they're going to think I'm like a bandwagon, that I'm not a super fan, and that I only applied because Jeff said so. So I ran into my room. It wasn't finished, but I submitted my video anyway. I really wanted to do some more editing. I was like, no, they have to know that this isn't just because I saw Jeff Probst say, you know, we're looking for young people. Like, I've wanted to do this for a while.
Mm-hmm. And how did you originally get into Survivor?
So I was into it when I was really young. It was a big family thing. Like, we had the staples, Amazing Race, House Hunters, and Survivor.
The big three, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the big three. And my dad was in the Navy at the time, so I didn't get to see him that much. But when I did, he would come home and we would watch like the shows together. And at that time, you know, it was really nice to bond over like the physicality, the social elements. But, you know, mainly I was watching as a kid, like all kids do, for the challenges. And I only really got into Survivor when I came to college, and a lot of people in like college communities watch Survivor for the social psychological aspects of it. And that's what really hooked me. You know, my big, he's a friend of Bryce's, Jack.
Yes.
He's on the circle.
Emily. So yes. Yes.
Yeah, yes. Emily. Emily got me into Survivor. You know, when we met, one of the first things he asked me was like, "Do you watch Survivor?" And I was like, "I haven't in a while, but like, I love the show." Started getting into it. And then my team, I was hanging out with them, the cross country team, they were watching Token Sheens. So I started watching with them. And then,
and you watched the whole season.
Yeah.
Not like Marianne.
I did not skip over any episodes like Marianne. Mm-hmm. And I love Token Sheens is one of my favorites. So Marianne should definitely go back and watch those episodes. It really got me to apply. It was like, it felt like there were so many signs pointing in that direction. Like, so many people in my life were intertwining with Survivor. And I was like, you know what? It would almost be a testament to like how far I had come as a human being. Because when I watched it as a kid, you know, I talked about it on the show. Like, I would look at the Aussies and the Malcolms and say like, wow, like, I'll never be like that. I'll just, you know, I would be like the Oz behind the curtains smart kid, but I would never be the physical, like, well-loved, like, you know, super fans favorite. Like, yeah. So it was just kind of like, wow, like, I could go on the show and I could actually do well physically and socially and strategically. So that would be, you know, a real testament to my growth.
Going through the experience of being on the show, then did you find that there were a lot of other people like in their early 20s that came up to you that are watching Survivor? Is it getting more popular with an even younger audience?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, a lot of times, I mean, since I've got so many friends in college communities, I find that a lot of fans who reach out, they'll be like, oh, I go to so-and-so university. And I'm like, wow, I have friends there. That's so incredible to like know that like my friends from when I grew up could be like in the same class as someone who watched me on TV, which is a really surreal experience. And
sure.
In fact, like, I've had a bunch of friends who've like said, oh yeah, like, I saw someone watching Survivor on campus and it was like crazy to know that you were on. Yeah, it's definitely been interesting. And I think the college community is a really engaged one. So that's one that Survivor, in terms of like a media strategy, should definitely work on building. I mean, it's such a great like bonding experience to all like watch the social interactions. And like, you know, this is when you're studying psychology and you're studying like how people interact and becoming an adult and knowing what it's like to be out and like the, in the field interacting with people. So it's cool. It's a cool, like, yeah, it's a cool microcosm of the world.
So I'd love to get your perspective on how Swathi ended up doing here on this season. She ultimately, I believe she's the youngest person in season 42 of Survivor, and then ultimately ends up going out. She didn't seem to be in a lot of trouble going in. It seemed like that she kind of had found her footing and then ultimately had just too many things going on. What did you make of Swathi and her run on this season?
So I think that Swathi was definitely caught in the crossfire of like an adjustment period. I think that Survivor's changing.
Yeah. What do you mean an adjustment period?
So people haven't seen, like 42 hasn't seen 41.
Right.
So they don't know how the game has evolved. So what we're seeing is like the last remaining people who don't know about what the new era is like. And so the adjustment I'd say is like oversharing, overplaying. Everybody's playing everybody. Like there's nobody who isn't playing both sides. I mean, you've got a couple of people who are like staunch loyalists, but that's like one or two. Mainly, I think it's like casting changes. They're casting for super fans. People, they want to see super fans on the show, and the people who are super fans, they love. And, you know, Rob, you're like the original super fan. How does it feel to have like, you know, so much legacy? Now it's like everybody is just cast to be like a different iteration of you.
Wow. I never thought of it that way before, Xander. So I guess I'm responsible for everything.
But yeah, I mean, like everybody.
No, that's very nice of you to say. I think that there are some other people along the way who also fit into that category. Xander, I appreciate what you said, but let me just get back to, let's forget about my era. Let's talk about the new era. And I'd love to get back to what you were saying about people overplaying in the new era and the adjustment going on.
Yeah, I think since these casts are full of super fans, a lot of people want to do everything that they can. It's also, you know, another effect that we kind of forget since it's been a year is these seasons were filmed right out of COVID. So not a lot of social interaction going on, not a lot of excitement. And it was an interesting play because you had to go from quarantine right into playing. I think people kind of neglect the fact that like coming out of quarantine really the game because you know, you're chomping at the bits to play and you're just so bored and you really want to just get out there. And this is the game you've always dreamed of playing. So I think it adds to that elevated, like everybody is like frantic playing so much. So it actually, I think the only thing that Swathi missed, but she couldn't have known, is that it tends to be the people who are calmer in Tribal Council who survive. I mean, you look at Daniel and Chanel, who played similarly both sides of the Vati tribe, but it ended up that, you know, Daniel pointed it out, Chanel got away pretty clean and Daniel ended up with the egg on his head. And I think that's because Daniel was a little frantic about it, where Chanel was calm. And it's easier to, I think, be around calming presences.
You know, with everything that went on with this tribal council and ultimately with Swathi going home. So we had Tori who talked to Rox Roy, who ultimately revealed the information about Drea as an extra vote. And then Rox Roy went back to Drea and said, like, is this the kind of person we want? Tori, who's spilling the tea. And then Drea knew that Tori was sort of like the squeaky wheel here who was giving away all of the information. Did Rox Roy potentially miss the bigger point out of what Tori was saying? Because when Tori goes to talk to Rox Roy, she's basically saying like, hey, that we need to us work together with Swathi and get out Drea. Because Drea did say to Rox Roy, or Drea did say to Tori and to Swathi, hey, let's get together. We're the women and we'll take out Rox Roy. And for Rox Roy, did he potentially blow it by blowing up Tori instead of saying like, okay, I have to vote out Drea?
Yeah, Rox Roy definitely had interesting line of thought processing because when he was talking, I think it was with Romeo, he said that it was just to the camera. He said that there was no clear reason that Tori had to vote Drea out. When Tori clearly gave, you know, a reason, she talked about Drea's duplicity and not telling about the extra vote. So I think Rox Roy might have missed that. Like maybe it really didn't hit with him that like his ally didn't tell him an advantage. I mean, And that should be a big concern, especially if you're going to be this type four Drea, Romeo, Roxroy, or I guess type three, and Swathi was like a part of that. But yeah, I think that Roy, he's definitely playing an interesting game, very specific kind of player that is Roy. And sometimes it can be frustrating. I know Tori tried to talk to him before the challenge and he was like, no, let's wait till after the challenge happens. But that's not how this game works. You got to be playing constantly. You got to be thinking far ahead. And if you're, you know, if you're just sitting in the water waiting for things to appear, then it's going to be your name written down. But nobody seems to be targeting him. So either they don't find him to be threatening or, you know, he's playing a good game that we haven't seen yet.
Well, once upon a time, I mean, Drea was talking about that like, we should get rid of Roxroy. I mean, that was her reason for talking to the women. But I think it's an interesting point about how that, you know, Roxroy seemed like very much like he wanted to vote out Tori at this next tribal council. And it was almost, even though she was coming to him with like important information, it was, I think he missed it just because he was just so focused on, okay, I need a reason to say to everybody that it's time for Tori to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And honestly, especially early on, it's really easy to get people to want to vote someone because nobody wants it to be them. Nobody wants to go home early. So people kind of jump at anything they can and latch onto that. I think Rox definitely had an opportunity where, you know, even just sowing seeds, it would have been pretty easy to get Tori gone. Yeah.
I want to go back to Swathi in terms of if there's anything that she could have done. Once this whole thing has swung back in her direction, did you see a move she could have made or something that she could have said to potentially get the target back on Tori?
Yeah, I think there was a moment towards the end, like right before Jeff said, you know, that it's time to vote. Roxroy talked about how Swathi, being so young, it's amazing to see her come out of her shell. I think if she had leaned into that in that moment, it could have been really good for her game. You got to remember that, like, you just have to remind your tribe mates that later down the line, someone like Tori, who has been shown to, you know, be playing very hard and playing a lot, is much more threatening than someone who's young and innocent. And if she had leaned into that, she kind of had a little bit of a ticket there, like, yeah, you know, I'm only 20, or at least she's saying to her fellow tribe mates that she's 20. I think she's 18, right?
I think she was 19.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, if you can just lean into that, like, you almost saw, like, Roxroy assumed almost like a fatherly role.
Yes.
If you can lean into that and use that to your advantage, it's super beneficial because nobody's ever going to see it from, like, a teacher-student relationship. The student never usurps the teacher. So to kind of create and foster that relationship, I think would have helped her a lot. You know, just like, listen, I'm young, like I'm still learning, like I'll be a loyal ally. You don't have to worry about me stepping out of line.
I wonder if for Swathi, if she maybe could have changed the tide by, you know, instead of trying to get into like a she said about like, what do you mean? This wasn't my plan. This was Tori's plan. You're believing her. Tori's the problem. Could she have potentially gone to Drea and to Romeo and said, all right, you know what? You got me. I did say that. I made a mistake. Can we, you know, can we move past this potentially as opposed to trying to say that, you know, Tori's crazy. I don't know what she's talking about. Maybe could that have potentially changed it?
Yeah, I think it would have been relatable too, especially to come to people who everybody's a big fan in the season. Everybody's playing both sides. So for Swathi to admit like, hey, you caught me playing both sides, but Tori is too. Listen, I'm going to fall in line. I mean, we've seen it not work with JD. JD did the same thing with Ricard and Shan, and they ended up, you know, sending him home. But it did kind of work with me, where I was caught in a lie with Tiffany, and my approach was like, hey, listen, like, I'm sorry, you got me. Like,
no, just it almost can like, you just set this up? So this is in the pre-merge when you had said you didn't have the idol?
Yes, so... So at this point, Evie and Voce knew about my idol, and Evie had told Tiffany. So Evie told me to tell Tiffany to kind of like bring her in on the, you know, it was more, I think, just like, honestly, I have no idea. It was starting to get very complex in terms mm-hmm. of like the actual agenda of like, was it to foster a relationship with Tiffany? Was it just to cause a rift between Tiffany and I? Probably to cause a rift between Tiffany and I.
Yeah.
But I told Tiffany, and when I tiffed with Tiffany.
Yeah.
But
is that better than mergatory?
Mergatory. I know she's pretty upset. You know, I don't know. I don't know who started it.
She does. She said she does.
Yeah, yeah. I never claimed credit for it. It just got right. shown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You don't edit the show. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But I did have a couple other portmanteaus that I was fine with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I rudely interrupted you point, when
I
you
was
were
telling
yeah,
Tiffany.
Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to kind of spin it where it wasn't as much of an egregious, like I held it from you. So I told her that I found it then, but she had known for a while, which was something I didn't know. So she caught me in the lie and then told me about it. And I ended up saying like, you got me, like, I'm sorry. I won't step out of line again, that kind of way. And it did set up a little bit of like, I'm just like almost like a student teacher relationship, like kid steps out of line, put back in their place.
Yeah.
If you're lowering yourself and you can take, because I think like a big thing about Survivor is keeping your ego in check. If you can, you know, let your ego get bruised, it'll get you really far in the game, because a lot of people, they just refuse to accept that they did something wrong. Everybody messes up. We're all human. And it's easy to like forget that, you know, these are real people that we're watching playing. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to play a perfect game. And anybody who's shown to play a perfect game, I'm sure the mistakes just weren't shown because, you know, they only have 40 minutes for an entire 48 hours of footage. So,
yeah,
you know, they're not going to. Yeah.
I just feel like that. If something you're doing, an argument you're making, like clearly like isn't working, people aren't buying it. You know, you could always, you know, change your tactic and go in a different direction. And I talked about this with Steven last night in regards to, you know, where, you know, Daniel was at, where, you know, almost like in a different context where, you know, could Daniel have, instead of like trying to, you know, refute the charges from Mike that, you know, you lied to me, you tricked me, as opposed to sort of like saying like, no, well, I made a mistake in doing that. Like, I kind of feel like that Tori probably is the one who did do a better job, where in talking with Swathi this morning, she talked about how, you know, Drea spent a lot of time talking with Tori. And while I felt like last night that Romeo and Drea had more to do with it changing, like, I think that Tori probably was able to sort of like grab onto the space of like, oh, like I just got, you know, I got duped. Like, I'm with you. And rather than, you know, get into a, get caught up in the like, why did you tell everybody that I had the secret vote? Why were you trying to work with Roxroy to get rid of me?
Yeah, I think Tori very much put her emotions aside. She was very calm throughout the entire tribal council. And I think that people need reassurance because, you know, that's, you know, the human condition is that nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody's questioning themselves and doubting themselves, even the people who seem to have it together. So people will gravitate towards ones who make them feel calm and make them feel reassured. But similar to what Daniel was talking about, except Daniel didn't take his own advice and he was very frantic, not very calm. You want people who are going to make you feel certain and sure, and then you can kind of lull them into a sense of certainty. And it seems like Tori did just that, because she was really calm during tribal and it seemed like her allies were very assured by her being calm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could tell that they were looking at her and they were making sure she wasn't getting frantic. She's not going to try something crazy. She's calm. She knows what she's doing and everything just falls into line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that by comparison, I think both Swathi and Zach came off like a little bit more like being, you know, a little bit more emotional than Tori ends up in that spot.
Yeah, it's a very interesting trick to like just come off way overconfident. I certainly did it when saying that Evie was not going home. And I think that playing it that way helps your case. Because if you're going to say, no, Evie's not going to go home, they're not going to vote for her, I don't have to play the idol, then people are going to think like, you know, if, or in the sense that like, when there was so much chaos and I'm just sitting calm and still and saying, nope, you're safe, like you're fine, everybody else can hear that. And they're thinking, oh, well, then he's going to play the idol for her because he's so calm. If he were worried and he wasn't sure, then he'd be nervous. Like, I don't know, I'm frantic. But being calm and being collected, people are kind of like, wait, like, what does he know that I don't? Like, mm-hmm. what's up here? Clearly something like maybe he's untouchable. Maybe he's going to play the idol. Like, something's wrong, because, you know, they expect you to be crazy and frantic. But if you're calm, then it's almost like, what? Yeah.
We saw Swathi play the shot in the dark in this episode, which amazingly, three out of the first four votes, we see the shot in the dark played in this season. Only Sydney plays the shot in the dark in season 41. Has that really surprised you how much more the season 42 cast is going to the shot in the dark?
Yeah, no, it really does. I think it could speak to a number of things. It could speak to the fact that people know they're going home, or it could speak to the fact that these people want it so badly. I mean, you could see with Swathi, she wanted so badly to stay that I think like maybe it's like, oh, any hope that I could have, I just want to stay in the game. And Zach too, you know, crazy big fan. It's like you really like any hope that he could stay in. And I think that a lot of people, you know, were lulled into a sense of security on 41 where they didn't feel like they had to play it. There wasn't as much scrambling. There wasn't as much frantic. It was kind of like there were so many fake plans out there that everybody was always calm, but everybody was also always like paranoid at the same time. It's a weird contradiction.
Yeah. Xander, was there ever a point when you considered going with the shot in the dark?
I wanted to do, and this is interesting, I wanted to do something kind of crazy with like the idol and the shot in the dark. If I could, like, because I wasn't sure logistically or like by the rules, could you give your shot in the dark if it's correct to someone else? So if I play my idol, then can I play my shot in the dark? And if it's correct, like if I get safe, then can I keep it or can I give it to someone else?
So say that again. Oh. Let me think that through.
Yeah. So if I say wanted to do like a double idol play, but okay, I only have one idol, could I perhaps play my idol for myself and then play the shot in the dark? And if it's safe, give it to someone else.
Hmm.
And then that's almost like a double idol play. But if it's not safe, then they go home.
Hmm. I would suspect they would say, no, you cannot do that. Like, I feel like they would say, you can play the idol for someone else and play the shot in the dark for yourself. But, or I wonder, could you potentially do the shot in the dark for yourself? And then can you play the idol if the shot in the dark hits for somebody else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure there are plenty of different ways. And then when you throw the extra vote in, it's like, if I play my shot in the dark, there are a lot of rules with, like, you know, if you play the shot in the dark, then you can't play your extra vote. So could I use my extra vote or like give it to someone else on the fly? Like, yeah, it was interesting with so many advantages. I'm sure there are a bunch of different combinations that would be interesting. But yeah, season 41, like, we really didn't play a shot in the dark. So you kind of forgot that it was a mechanic of the game. But in 42, I think this will probably solidify that maybe this is something they'd use in future seasons. Because if you just based it off of 41, it's like, no, it was something that they tried, didn't work. But here it seems to be something that's like used pretty frequently. And everybody who's used it was someone who was being targeted. Really interesting.
In season 41, was it not used because that there was a lot of thinking about it in terms of like, we have to make sure that these votes end up being like not obvious so people don't play the shot in the dark? Was like a lot of the sort of blindsides that happen as a result of people being focused on, well, we have to prevent them from going to the shot in the dark at this spot?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of obscurity with what the actual plan was. Everybody was being fed fake plans. So a lot of people were under the impression that, okay, like, I'm being fed multiple plans, like this could be false, but if I play my shot in the dark, then I certainly don't have a vote and my allies don't trust me. So there's almost that, like, if I play my shot in the dark and I'm wrong, then I'm not only I'm in the game one more day, but my allies are like suspicious of me. I honestly think that it's probably a better play because any, you know, any one more day in the game, like everything could change. So playing day to day does tend to work better, I think, in my opinion.
One of the things that has come up a lot in season 42, like as we've been sort of like talking through, like, can you do this? Can you do this? How much time do you feel like is like, do you feel like production allows for like every single like brainstorm, like question of like every sort of like twist of the rules that you might have? Because that to bring it back to ancient history, when I played that, we had only seen a rock draw in season four of Survivor with Pascal. And at the final six, that there was a point where it could have been a 3-3 vote. And I had questions about, hey, what happens if in a tie vote? Can you explain to me the tie break rules? And now we all know them as Survivor fans. They told me, well, no, you go to tribal council, you have a 3-3 tie, and then we'll tell you what the rules are going to be when we get to the time. I'm like, oh, that's not really, you should tell me now. They're like, nope, we're not going to tell you.
No, exactly. I think a lot of the things that, you know, they kind of cross that bridge when they get to it. Production tends, at least like from my impression too, I was also told with the butterfly line that I had to say it. Mm-hmm. And that was something that evolved to eventually I didn't have to say it. I think they just let it play out on its own. And when questions need to be asked, then they can all convene. But I think from like in a confessional type of, you know, situation where you're asking, hey, could I do this? I guess it's because there are so many different producers that they can't all agree on something. Mm-hmm. So if they don't know the immediate answer, they just decide not to give you it. So I think, yeah, for my case, it was that, you know, I asked, oh, can I like not say it at before the challenge so that I can wait for other people like Mike did? And the rule at the time was, no, you have to say it. But clearly, once nobody was finding their idols and Brad was sent home, they understood that it was going to be a lot of me saying that line. And I guess the rules kind of evolved. You know, I'm not sure what their thought process was. It could have been an error. You know, there's so many crew members and so many people on production that I'm sure it's just really hard to get everything all right, that sometimes there are little like slips and miscommunications.
So I'm really glad that we have the opportunity to talk to you because we have a lot of different questions. And you were involved with a lot of these advantages in season 41. So we can get your perspective on a lot of things that were happening, more so with the Vati tribe, where we ended up having this tribal council last week with people losing votes and ultimately the Beware advantage and Shipwheel Island coming across. Now, you went to the very first iteration of Shipwheel Island when you and JD and Danny went there, and we saw you risk your vote and you successfully gained an extra vote. And when you came back from Shipwheel Island, you told everybody back at Yasa exactly what happened, right? There was you didn't hide anything. You told them exactly how it all went down, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And so that you then put Evie in a pretty good position where Evie was able to go to the second Shipwheel Island. And then when it came down to it with Deshaun, was able to say, okay, well, I know I need my vote tonight. Like there was no confusion. But basically when Evie came in and Evie was able to operate on Shipwheel Island, completely knowing, okay, this is the drill and this is what we're doing. And, you know, made a bond with Deshaun. Deshaun ends up walking away with the extra vote. But compare that to what happened here with Jenny and with Chanel. We didn't get to see exactly what Jenny told to the tribe when she came back. But do you feel like that, like your experience sort of justifies that, you know, you should tell everybody what happened at Shipwheel Island?
I think so. I think 39 was a big reason why I wanted to tell everyone what the island was. I saw that, you know, people would come back and they just continue to keep up this lie. And eventually it's like everybody goes to the island of the idols and it's like, oh, you know, like we all know what it is now. But at the same time, like I'm sure early on, if people, they're not going to use the island once. It's not like this journey thing is just going to be a one-off time thing. So I knew that, like, people were going to go back, and if they come back with a different story than mine, it could put a target on my back. So why not tell everyone? I think that it breeds a lot of trust, and you know that people are going to go back to that island. It also, if you're working with your tribe, you know, if you get on a tribe like Taku, and they are a type four, telling them about that could really help your alliance. It just depends on whether or not you want to stay tribal after the merge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that Marianne was one of the people I noticed that she told her tribe exactly how it went. She told them about the extra vote, how, the, you know, the mechanics of things worked. And it benefited Omar because he knew that Chanel shouldn't have risked her vote. He went in knowing exactly what to do, knowing that it would be foolish for Chanel to risk her vote if she was going to go to tribal, and that was his logic. But of course, you know, people don't think logically all the time, and, you know, you're going to decide on the margin a lot. So Chanel decided, like, it's very much like a levels of game theory. Like, okay, so Omar knows that I'm not going to play mine, so maybe he's going to play his, but then if he knows that I'm thinking this, then maybe he's not going to play it. So you can get caught up and just really psych yourself out. So I'm sure she did a lot of thinking. And honestly, I do applaud the risk takers, because at the end of the day, it makes the game a whole lot more interesting. And you get a tribal council where a bunch of people don't have votes, who weren't targeted at all, by the way, which is, you know, credit to them. That's like really hard to go a tribal council without a vote. And that's something that we're seeing more. But like to be completely powerless and know that your dream could just be taken away without you having anything else other than your voice, it's like really credit to Mike and Chanel for staying alive in that, and credit to Chanel for taking the risk. I love the risk takers. Yeah.
Okay. I have a lot of follow-up questions to all that. Let me go real quick to the risk taking. So this has been something that we've been talking about here in this season where, you know, hey, Survivor, got to make big moves, got to be the risk taker. You took a lot of risks in your game in season 41, but do you feel like that Survivor is teetering after what we saw last week on the brink of that maybe there is more in not taking as many risks and ultimately like playing it a little bit safer as some of the advantages have become less powerful and come with more consequences?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, and, you know, based off of my season, it's not really even rewarding to survive despite those consequences. Like, you could take all the risks possible in the game, which is pretty close to what I did, take all the punishments for them, survive anyway, and it still doesn't even, you know, warrant you a win. I definitely think that it makes your time out there more exciting.
Okay.
Like, it makes it, and, it, you know, depending on what your impression of a win is, like, is it winning the game or is it leaving with like a really satisfying experience where you felt like you did everything you could and like you know truly that you played a really incredible game? Like if I didn't take as many risks, I think, you know, maybe I get to the end, I still lose, and then I'm like, ah, like I wish I played harder. But at least I can end the game knowing I played so hard at every corner and I did everything possible. Like everything under the sun, I was getting my hands in everything. They had, you know, one scene that was never shown where I just like took everything out of my pockets and it's like just a bunch of these goodies. And it's like, wow, you know, I'm really doing a lot and it feels good. So it's like a satisfying conclusion to know that I went out and took a lot of risks. And I think that, you know, there is something satisfying about that. In terms of gameplay, yeah, I think it is a risk, but, you know, because you're going to have to deal with consequences. But do I regret picking up the war advantage? Not at all. I think that, you know, it was one really cool to be the first person in history to say a stupid phrase on Survivor.
Yeah.
And then two, it's just like that's part of my Survivor story, you know, like I'll forever have that. Whereas if I choose not to take it, then he's the guy that passed it up.
Yeah. All right. So you lost your vote in the pre-merge, like we saw with some of these contestants this season. Specifically, last night we saw Chanel talking about what happened at the previous tribal council, where Daniel felt like, hey, I have been, you know, I was blindsided. I was double-crossed by Chanel. Chanel was able to say, well, like, hey, what are you talking about? I didn't even have a vote. How are you saying I betrayed you? I didn't even vote. And I just think that it's interesting where, you know, the not having a vote could be a blessing and a curse. Did you find any power in not having a vote? Where did that, was it able to free you from potentially having to make some tough calls?
Yes. In the sense of like, the only problem is that it was pre-merge. Voce was obviously someone I was close with, and I was very much in on the Voce vote. In fact, I was someone...
And you would have voted Voce out.
So I, in fact, was really pushing for Voce because I knew it was probably between him and I, and me not having a vote, I had to be the one like making a lot of the push. So I was constantly saying, like, I was trying to elevate it. Really, it did help me in the sense that I wanted to elevate Voce's threat level and lower mine simultaneously. And a really easy way to do that is say, well, I don't even have a vote. And, you know, I've told you about these advantages. I want to share them down the line. They're for us. We're tribe strong. And Voce, he does have a vote. He's clearly very calculated, very smart. He's, you know, hiding that a little bit. And people could obviously tell Voce was someone who was smart. So I think me not having a vote definitely made me less of a threat, because at the end, I'm kind of like a sitting duck. And even though there's no such thing as like an IOU in Survivor, you should never try and say like, oh, you know, if I help them out now, they'll help me out later. They won't. But maybe people think that way. They're like, oh, if we get him, you know, and I think this was part of the reason why Evie and Tiffany were so mad at me, is because from their perspective, they're saving me. Like, you know, I'm a sitting duck. I'm like, you know, their little puppy dog. I've got no vote, and they're bringing me further. From my perspective, I'm putting in a lot of legwork to say, I'm powerless. Please help me. Let's get the guy who's really smart. So from both perspectives, we're both kind of right. The problem is that they think I owe them, but that's not how the game works. Everybody's going to be playing for themselves. So it can help you survive, I think. And it actually might in this case. Like Chanel and Mike were never even brought up during all that confusion. But then again, it's so hard. Like, props to Hai for changing his vote during tribal council.
Yeah, that was interesting because we didn't really know exactly how that came to be. But according to Hai in the episode, that he says that he like he read that something wacky was going on, and instead of putting a vote on Mike, he doubled up his vote on Jenny.
Yep. No, that's a really hard thing to do, because going into tribal council, if you're told a plan, it's like really easy to just want to say, you know what, I want to stick with it, but to be bold and go against it without any confirmation. You know, he didn't have anyone to talk to about that. He just had himself. So it was probably really hard to make that on the fly decision, but great read on his end. I was caught in the same situation where I felt that people were lying to me. Something was up. But I still didn't want to change my vote, because I felt like if I did and I was wrong, then it just looks bad and you end up pissing off the people.
Which tribal council was this?
So this is the one where Tiffany went home. Yes. And I ended up voting for Nasir, because I was told Nasir at first, then Heather. But I knew, so Tiffany was the first target, and we were all talking about, you know, whether or not we want Tiffany to go home. And it was kind of easy to latch on to something. The night before, she was like up talking a lot in the shelter, and sometimes like even getting on people's nerves with little things like that. I mean, if you're living with these people out on an island, not getting sleep can be like a pretty big annoyance. And honestly, a lot of people will latch onto things like that. So when I was talking with Shannon Ricard, I was saying, you know, Tiffany, she's like always up late talking, and it's like, I just want to get some sleep. And you can latch onto little things like that. So I was all down for Tiffany. And then suddenly the plan changed. I'm being told Nasir. I'm being told Heather. And once it got to Heather, I knew it wasn't going to be Heather. That would not make any sense. It's the first merge vote. So what I did is I sat Erica down and Shan down, because I knew Erica was really close with Heather. And I told Shan to come over here, because Shan's the one who told me Heather. And I brought them around the fire, and I was like, Shan, tell me who we're voting for. And she had to say Heather, because that's what she told me last. And Erica's like, I didn't know that. And so Erica goes and talks to Heather. Heather does her like stand up thing at Tribal. It becomes a live Tribal. It becomes a mess. And that was like something that was able to get me by, is I knew I didn't have to play my idol because it was just so chaotic. Mm-hmm. And sowing those seeds of like this, it's similar to the ECA situation where someone tells you something, you tell that person someone, that person tells another person someone, and then suddenly it's this big confusing mess. And if Tori had been frantic during this Tribal Council, I think it would have been a really like live Tribal, hard to figure out the vote. But because Tori was so stable, I think, again, that just means that, like, Roxroy and Drea can see that. They know, okay, like, there's an answer here. There's an easy solution. And I think people do kind of entropy. They, like, they gravitate towards the easy answers because why make it more complicated than it has to be? It's exhausting, and you're already so tired out there.
So if there are sort of no secrets in the current iteration of Survivor, is the best move to not say anything? That do not give instructions to anybody in terms of like what you were going to do.
That's why I was saying we might be in an adjustment period, because like we as the viewers know 41 and how there's just oversharing of everything, but 42 doesn't know that, so it's kind of the same thing. But 43 and 44, maybe we see a little more stoicism. Maybe we see like don't tell your allies anything, keep mm-hmm. everything to yourself. I think it could be a viable strategy, and that is something cool about how the game evolves. I don't know if I like so much that games are dependent on previous games, but I guess that's, you know, part of it. It's like an added layer, and, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a player that's going on, you got to think about how the Survivor meta affects your season. So season 43 and 44 are probably going to be way less sharing, way more risk averse, maybe because they know about the consequences, and that'll cause another evolution of the game in reaction. But yeah, we could see some overcorrecting. We could see some like, don't tell anybody anything, which, you know, it might be a viable strategy. We'll see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it might be kind of a little bit more like sports, maybe the NFL or the NBA, where there's like, you know, like offenses are sort of like running a certain way, and there are trends overall in the league that are not really the same from year to year. And then you see like more teams copying strategies that were successful. So, you know, more so than some of the other sports where, you know, the game does continue to shift. It would just be weird as if like that every other year the teams hadn't seen the NFL from the year before.
Yes, exactly. And which is why I think a little element of chaos and unpredictability can go a long way. Doing things that are outside of the box, like maybe stepping out of a reward to give it to someone else because mm-hmm. the bench looks a little like it, you know, could. I'm really hoping that there's another bench in 42 and we can see what that advantage is.
I thought that there might have been that last night when they cut to, you know, what was it? Roxroy and I forget who the other person was who was sitting out. Maybe was it Chanel in the first challenge? I thought that like, oh, is there going to be an advantage over there?
Yeah, no, I was really curious too. And it's something that like I was looking everywhere. So it wasn't out of the ordinary for me mm-hmm. when I was checking. I was always looking for tripod structures. They love to hide them under the tripod structures, those wooden like three pieces mm-hmm. of woods that make a triangle. In challenges, like corners of tables and puzzles. And so like when I got to the bench, I was like, oh, this is like another place to check. It looks like the yeah. Sarah Lucina bench. And you see me look over the side because that's where the Sarah Lucina advantage was. It was sitting on the side. So when I saw it wasn't there, I was like, oh, no callback to Sarah Lucina's bench.
Yeah.
And I wanted to check underneath. Yeah.
Xander, could we just real talk here? The season is over. Okay. So because we heard lots of different theories about why you sat out of that challenge that we wondered, did Xander see that there was going to be an advantage over there? Is that why he sat out? You said in the episode, I wanted to be there with the people that lose the challenge because I feel like that's when the alliances are going to happen. Tiffany said he sat out because he didn't like the reward that they were going to have that day and gave up his spot because he didn't want to eat grilled cheese. So is it one of those or is it all of the above?
It's three out of the four. Yes. So it is. Yes. That I thought it looked like the bench with an advantage.
Yes.
And I like got this weird feeling. I was like, oh, you know what? That looks like eerily. And like that was just like, that wouldn't be enough to get me to sit out because I love competing. Obviously I want a reward. And I think that like, you know, yeah, I just want to compete. It doesn't make sense to sit out just for like a hunch. The second part was that, yes, I did want to end up with the losers. And it actually, that was like a big part of my strategy is going to the people who kind of needed a rock more and being that rock for them. Shan and Liana were very upset that they hadn't won anything. They didn't get the merge feast. They were very tired. Shan, especially Shan, the elements were really wearing thin on her. And so to be with those people and struggle with them, like I could see that that underdog mentality does fuel people. You kind of want to like spite the man, like change things up if things aren't going your way. So being with those people, definitely there's way more room to work with those people. Cause the people on the top who are enjoying themselves, you know, they're like, things are good. Things don't need to change. But the people on the bottom who are upset, they're emotional, they're more willing to make an erratic decision. Those are the people who actually will work with you a lot more, which is something that I don't really ever see anyone talking about or doing, like going for the, you know, the people who lose, the people who are struggling.
So if anything that I feel like I haven't heard that before on Survivor. I feel like that Steven kind of articulated in Second Chances that, hey, well, he was like really bummed out after not winning a reward challenge because not so much about the reward. He said that like, I am really feeling like I'm missing out on the bonds that are happening from the people that win the challenge and go off and celebrate together. And he feels like that a lot of the strategizing happens for the people that have won reward. I thought that was an interesting flip of that coin from you to say that there's a lot of strategizing that happens amongst the people that lose the challenge.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot, that like strategizing on a reward is where it really happens, especially on bigger rewards early after merge. I don't think that's true as much. Maybe if it's like close to final three and you want to make, you know, a final three deal or you want to get a small group of people, big rewards, not going to happen. Too many people with their own plans and agendas, they're not going to come up with one concise thing. And nobody wants to strategize while there are other people so close quarters. So big rewards like that, not worth being on. You want to be with the smaller group that's going to make a more erratic decision. And I think that there like is some merit to both sides, but I don't know. I feel like the people who are comfortable and eating and happy are the ones who like, things don't have to change. We don't have to shake it
right up.
I'm happy the way I am. It's like falling into complacency. You kind of always want to be on edge. Like, you know, Tony very much like, you know, paranoid, on edge a little bit all the time. I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point. I think the place where I feel like that I have seen it the most in Survivor history, I feel like, is especially at the Loved Ones Challenge. The people that don't get picked to go on the Loved Ones Challenge, now it doesn't always hold, but I feel like that there's always a sentiment of like, hey, if the four of us didn't get to see our loved one, that's it. We're gonna vote against them, that they sort of revealed themselves, and that's it. And then, you know, sometimes like cooler heads prevail. But I feel like that comes up a lot on that particular challenge.
Yeah, I think that's a great like evolution of the hypothesis that like early on post merge, it's better to be with the losers, but later on, way better to be with the winners and like bring your allies on rewards because they're going to start to feel entitled to things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
That's smart stuff, Xander. I like what you said about that.
I like what you like me saying about that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Okay.
And then the last reason I forgot there were.
So
the last reason was that Erica was very much someone who was in the middle, a straggler, because she was the target right after the merge when she was gone on exile. And then, you know, people made her aware of being a target. She wasn't sure if she could trust the lose or, you know, hide amongst their ranks or go with the underdogs and Yasa. So Erica was someone who's way more willing to like Nasir was not going to break away from Luvu, but Erica is someone who's, you know, maybe a potential breakaway. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to forge a relationship with someone who was a potential breakaway in Erica. And also, you know, it's pretty shitty that she got two gray rocks. So there was like, you know, of course I'm like, I think it's hard for people to understand that, like, I'm a kind person in real life, so I can, like, make kind deeds that also have unkind agendas. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be both at the same time. But to Tiffany's point about me being on a diet, that's what I used to say to people that so that they wouldn't think that I was scheming.
So cover. Yeah,
that was my cover. So yes. She thought, yeah, because I ate the pizza reward, no problem. Mm-hmm. But I told everyone that, oh yeah, I didn't do the grilled cheese because I didn't want it. I can't eat bread and dairy, which mm-hmm. Usually I am on a diet, but not on Survivor.
Yeah.
So it was like a good cover up, a good way to, because people were curious. They're like, why did you switch? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh yeah, I didn't want the reward, and I thought I could help out Erica.
Mm-hmm. So Xander, I'd love to get your take on Jonathan this season and what he's been able to do. Now, I think that a lot of people look to you as sort of like a person who, when it gets down to the Yasa 4, as somebody who was, really helping out with some of the challenge wins that were coming in your group. But I feel like that it's probably not fair to Jonathan to say that that's a one-to-one situation.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like, not even close. He's like what I would want to be. He's mm-hmm. like what I romanticize in terms of being a workhorse. Like, I've always had this weird romantic idea of like the workhorse. I loved Animal Farm's Boxer, the horse, the one who just like puts the revolution on his back, builds the empire, and then is turned into glue and doesn't get any respect at all. For some reason, it just seems like very poetic to me. But like, that's,
was that you in Survivor?
I definitely like wanted to be someone who was very like selfless, giving, and like putting the team on my back, like that boulder challenge, mm-hmm. Just letting everyone step on me and like get a bunch of scrapes and bruises. Like, I definitely like, I find it to be something that's like very noble, and mm-hmm. like that's, that was something that I was very like happy to do. Plus, like, I definitely want to win. And Jonathan, similarly, I think he's got a very competitive spirit where sometimes it's hard for, like, he lets slip that there's such a tight four. I think he really loves winning the challenges with people, putting it on his back, and he feels that growth because he loves winning. I think he's a real competitive guy. And, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, I definitely relate to that. But no, I mean, he's like Aquaman, like absolutely built. I don't think I could ever be that way because I run too much, mm-hmm. but yeah, no, super cool to see that. And honestly, like, that's what Survivor's all about, is like taking all these different people, putting them in like one glass box, like mm-hmm. on display for all of us. And, it's such art to see, like, he's like a character, but he's himself. And, I definitely advise fans not to get too caught up in the characters of people, because we are real people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people forget that. But yeah, it's fun to know that there are somewhat like, he's like someone that you would write in like a play. Like, you'd cast like Jonathan, like the bold, strong guy who wants to carry the team on his back, loyal and kind, like, yeah, mm-hmm. a gentle giant.
So I feel like while you had, definitely, skills in the challenges, that I also felt like that you wore like sort of the camouflage of like, hey, I'm the, young guy with long hair, like maybe you don't take him as seriously as a threat as, somebody that you have in Jonathan. Tell me, what are you seeing that he's doing or not doing in terms of just like how he's playing the game that he has to play as this person?
I think he knows that he's going to get caught up in wanting to perform in challenges. And he's already such a big guy that there's no point in trying to hide it. Like, someone like Danny or Jonathan, even if you're trying to hide it and you're not performing like crazily as Jonathan is, people are still going to say, he's a big guy, we should take him out. And that's kind of irrational, because big guys don't do really well in the challenges. They're mostly mm-hmm. endurance and balance and, sometimes strength, but rarely. I can't even remember the last strength, like raw strength challenge that we had. Mm-hmm. Like, the only one I can think of is Karamoan and just holding up that log.
Yeah. So I feel like, in 39, there's like the challenge at the merge where I feel like it came down to, was it Jamal and Aaron, where they're like had to be like in a, like a squat, like holding. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you get that once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty rare one, especially towards the end. It's mostly puzzles. Mm-hmm. But I think Jonathan's making a really good play when he talked to Lindsay about how, wow, everybody seems to want to use me as a shield. Like being aware of that as your position as a meat shield and leaning into that, that's huge. You know, I think that could really, you know, that could really benefit him down the line if he's advertising himself as a shield. And that's almost, that goes back to the evolving after seeing prior seasons. Tony, we saw take advantage of shields. Now people can take advantage of Tony's by saying, hey, I'm a shield, use me, keep me around. But then you end up duping them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that this will work for Jonathan?
I think it will. I definitely, like, to the people that I was closer with, like Yasa, I was always talking about how, like, I'd be a good shield, you know, because I'm someone who clearly has, like, the surfer guy archetype, even though, you know, I don't really surf that much at all. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, the long hair. Yeah.
But yeah, long hair. So people are going to think maybe he's, like, amazing ace, good at challenges. So that's something like I was advertising, and I think it worked really well for me advertising why people would logically vote you out. So I think that Jonathan, yeah, it'll probably do really well for him.
Do you think that there's anything to worry about for Jonathan as sort of coming across as Jeff's favorite in the season?
I think that is something to worry about. But again, it's kind of like conversation in tribal councils, in challenges. People are mostly thinking about themselves. You're thinking about what you want to mm-hmm. say. You're thinking about doing the right thing on your end. It's a lot of looking in rather than looking out. So I don't know how many people are thinking like, oh, you know, Jonathan's going to get a great edit. Jonathan's loved by production and Jeff. I don't know how like attentive people are to that. I certainly was. You know, some of my decisions, it's like interesting to think, oh, like, you know, what would the edit be if yeah. this person is kept around? Because there oftentimes are a dichotomy. And if someone wins the season and you were not on their side, you're automatically cast on the villain's side or you're not shown in a positive light. So something that people probably should think about is like, you know, in terms of keeping people around, are they going to be more of a hero than you? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be more in the spotlight? I mean, you know, it's pretty trivial, but like it'd be frustrating if you made a lot of good moves and then your adversary won for all those good moves to be just, you know, washed away. So it's, you know, something to think about. I don't think that people are going to think like Jonathan's production's favorite, Jonathan's Jeff's favorite, but it's something that maybe people should think about if they want their, you know, satisfying end to yeah. the season.
Did you feel like that you had a good understanding of what the edit was going to be like while you were playing in season 41?
I think I definitely thought a lot about it. Like definitely something that aided my decision in fire making was that I knew Deshaun had a lot of hero content. So I think if I take out Erica, I think Deshaun wins. I think everybody's pretty clear on that, you know, in exit press that like I even lose to Heather, Ricard said. Mm-hmm. So I think I lose to a lot of people. So I basically choose who I lose to. In terms of like cinematic things to show for the cameras, Deshaun, a lot of hero content in tribal councils, a lot of talking about his struggles and like very in theme with like overcoming adversity on the season. I think Deshaun had a lot of content for like a really good edit. Erica, you know, like great player, but not a lot of like physical things that you can show on camera mm-hmm. that are like, you know, moves that people are going to be entertained by, or, you know, really it was like Exile Island. And then, yeah, it was, I think like one of the bigger moves that people talked about at Tribal Council was voting out Danny over Deshaun, but that wasn't very like, didn't have much impact. So mm-hmm. if you're thinking about like, you know, if you're considering whether or not you're going to lose, you could kind of pad who you lose to based off of like the edit.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like that there was a go-to person on your season that Jeff would go to the most on the Matt chat?
I feel like Jeff loved Deshaun.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Jeff loved Deshaun. He loved his answers. I feel like those two really like there was a lot of content there in terms of like Deshaun's story and him talking in tribal councils. Yeah, he was like an entertainer. I always felt that he was someone who who would have like a pretty great edit if you won.
I want to ask you about a couple of things that changed between season 42 and season 41, where one big thing was the Beware Advantage idol. In season 41, your clue said that, hey, you have to say these things whenever you go to the reward challenge. And if all three clues don't get read, your idol was going to be null and void, correct?
Yeah.
Did they tell you what would happen to your vote? Would your vote come back?
Yeah, the vote would come back after the merge.
Okay. This season, they changed the rule to that if the three phrases are not said by the merge, your idol automatically becomes an idol. Which rule do you think is better for the game?
Ooh, that's interesting. I think, honestly, like, in terms of, it's so hard to say because I feel like there are merits to having the disadvantages because, you know, it goes closer to like a back to basics. There aren't like three idols in circulation. There's only, you know, it makes it so that it's harder to achieve idols. But I think honestly, 42's version might be better because it is a bit like, it's weird to discourage taking risks because that's what Survivor loves so much. And like, in terms of like the TV product that they release, they love like, oh, like, you know, it's every Survivor's dream to go out and find an idol and like, oh my God, I found it. But then like, what kind of moment is it if it's like, wow, I found it. But like, oh, it takes away my vote. Like, I think Survivor would really hate it from a production standpoint if people stopped looking for idols altogether. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. 42s is nice because like you don't just look for something that you've always dreamed of finding an advantage and then get, you know, your vote taken away and then possibly no idol at all. There was like, I think it was too far. I think 41s was too far of like, not only do you not get your vote, but if it's not found on other beaches, which you don't have any control over, then there's no idol at all.
I think probably like from a game perspective, like if you could combine the two where that, okay, if it's not said by the merge, the idol is of no use, but you don't have to say it at the match chat if you don't want to, you know, you still have the option of to say it or to not say it because, it, you know, if you don't have to say it and your idol becomes an idol anyway, it's basically just like the only reason that you would say it is just to get your vote back pre-merge, which you may or may not even need.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Again, there's so many rules that it's like it is hard to keep track a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a very good point.
Yeah. So they also changed up the sweat versus savvy challenge. Now, back in the first episode, poor Voce had to go along with it. You said, hey, let's do sweat. I think we can do this. And they changed it to only one person gets to go do it. Would you have been so ambitious in season 41 to do it as a one person?
Not even close. And they get two guesses too. We only got one guess in the puzzle and we all had to agree on the guess, which if you've got, you know, brash personalities on your season, like Tiffany and Abraham, you know, instantly clash. Mm-hmm. You can tell that they were like bold people that, you know, you're not going to come to a conclusion. And even if you did, it's probably not going to be the right answer. I definitely liked seeing the puzzles. It was really fun. We didn't get to see the puzzle, which was another added element. It's covered. So that mystery. Yeah, the mystery adds to it because it's like, well, what is the puzzle? It could be that you can get some pretty tricky puzzles. And I know a lot of people ran like computer programs to figure out how many triangles there were for my season. So it was interesting to see like, wow, people are like really struggling to come up with consensus on what the answer is.
Did you have any ill effects from the carrying the water? I know that famously Voce got pretty bloodied up with real blood from doing that. Did you have any sort of problems after you did the sweat challenge?
Yeah. I had a pretty scratched up back and I got really sunburned. And that's why I got the patches right here.
Yeah.
It was like terrible sunburn. Cause I just, you know, I didn't put any sunscreen on, and 4 hours out in the sun, it's like, you know, just absolutely baking. So yeah, I got pretty bad sunburn, pretty scratched up back, cause I would carry the pot like this. And then I would have to run. So I had to fill up Voce's barrel, and or I had to fill up my barrel and then a portion of Voce's barrel. And the only way to do that was like, I had to start running.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was running, the pot would like clack back and forth on my back. And, you know, the second long scene that they showed really did not do it any justice. That was like probably, yeah, it was definitely one of the hardest things I've done in my life, like really grueling. And then right into the hike for the journey.
Oh, yeah.
Those first couple of days I was exhausted, which, if anything, it kind of helped curb my showing off in challenges, because I was like really exhausted the first couple of days. I was kind of like, you know, even in the one where we were in the water and Yasa was super far behind, the beanbags one, you can see I'm just drained. Like,
yeah.
I'm really sapped. And I think that it's probably better to like hide challenge prowess, you know, like Jonathan was saying. But you know, it's just don't go in the middle. Like, if you're going to be great at challenges, lean into being a huge meat shield. But if you're, you know, not going to be good at challenges, then like stay hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we get on that rabbit hole from?
The rabbit in the mailbox, that classic story.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
The sweat challenge. Yeah.
Yes. Then the advantage amulet that we saw, this is new. Do you wish that they would have had that in season 41?
Yeah, it's kind of luck of the draw, though.
And what would you have done with the fake blood?
Fake blood. I definitely would have gone mud. Fake blood. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, Hive ended up putting it on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He played it off pretty well. And it was so fun to see, like, Lydia, like, oh, my God, are you bleeding? Like, I think that was definitely, like, a really cool element to it. It's so sad that it has to be luck of the draw. Like, you know, oh, you just decide to do the third leg. Well, here's an advantage. But I guess like a lot of things are like that, you know, like finding an advantage on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool. I think it's an interesting, like, honestly, I think this one is a better, advantage in terms of how cool the gameplay could be, like how interesting the strategy is compared to like, the Beware advantages, because for this one, you could gain something by working with these people, but you could also gain something by, you know, not working with these people. And it's interesting. Like,
what would you do?
I think I'd probably like say, let's go all in for working together and just like using these, but then try, if anybody mentions one of their names, go right for it. You know, that's probably what'll happen. You know, they're always going to be thinking of that. And, you know, people are selfish. They get a little greedy. You know, once they, if Hai hears Drea's name out there, then Hai's probably going to latch onto that and be like, yeah, oh, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the Beware Advantage phrases this season? Do you think that they are tougher than the Beware Advantages, that the phrases for season 41?
I think they are a little tougher. The mailbox one, that one's pretty challenging. The butterfly one, I could find a way to weave it in. And
I thought you did a good job.
Thank you. Thank you. The good part is that you can just keep. So that was my plan. I kept watching, you know, you guys' know-it-alls after the episodes.
Yes.
And you would always talk, is he just going to make a callback? That was the plan, is to just keep making callbacks in different ways to how ridiculous that was going to be.
Yeah.
And something that people forget, which is huge, is that the other tribes have not met you yet. Since we watch every single tribe, it feels like, oh, you know, we know everyone, so they know everyone. They don't know the other tribes. So, like, my first impression for everybody was the first time I spoke for people on Luvu and people on Ua was the butterfly line. So everyone imagined me to be this, like, stoner guy, and I guess it kind of worked with me.
Yeah.
Being like, yeah, man, butterflies are just, like, dead relatives saying hi. But that's, like, it could be pretty damaging.
Do you think that that potentially changed the way that people viewed you in the game?
It's a first impression, yeah. I think, honestly, whether subconsciously or consciously, I think that it did have an effect. I mean, like, that's what you know, people, we all have our biases. And like, if you're going to see, and I'm going to feed into that bias by saying a stupid line like that. I mean, Brad, when I first met him after the season, you know, he was like, oh man, we were making fun of you guys all the time, talking about like the butterfly boy, like, you know, he thought I was some pothead. And it's like, it's easy to think that. So it was super interesting to know that for anybody who didn't meet me in the game, meeting them outside of the game, they were like, wow, like, I thought you were, you know, the stoner guy. But yeah, I'm sure it probably did have some ripple effects in terms of how people perceived me.
Xander, I have a lot of questions for you from the listeners of Rob is a Podcast.
Totally. Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Let's see. How about a question about from Aubra, who says, do you think it's harder for a younger person to win Survivor? We saw both Swathi and Zach, two of the younger contestants on the season, end up going out. What's that like for somebody who comes in, you know, not necessarily everybody is later days, as Evie once said, but for, you know, players who are predominantly in their late 20s, 30s, what's that like going up against?
I think it's a huge hurdle. Yeah. It's really interesting because a lot of people tend to cover up their age, like Swathi, like Michael Yerger, and a lot of, other young people. They tend to talk about them being older. They pretend to be like 20s, mid 20s. And that's for a reason, is because people see it as a liability in terms of like giving someone a win. Like, if they're young, they don't even have the experience to know what to do with that money. It's going to ruin their lives. Being young, I think there's a sense of entitlement and seniority too sometimes. Like, oh, they're just young, they don't know any better. When, you know, you could spend 100 years of doing absolutely nothing and be no more wise than like a 15-year-old. So it doesn't necessarily matter how old you are, but more so how much you do with the years that you do have. So me being someone who's done a lot in like my 21 years, mm-hmm. I feel like it was easy to come off like as an old soul to a lot of people. I got that a lot out on the island, is that like, you know, and I don't really like young people things anyway. I'm not like, oh dude, let's like go out and drink. I'm more like, you know, I want to go antiquing, see a national
antiquing
park. I love antiquing. Yeah.
What kind of antiques are you looking for?
I mean, all my antiques, my room's just filled with some. I've got like, you know, tons of old knickknacks, and like, you know, that's an old fire hydrant from the 1800s. Like, mm-hmm. just a bunch of things with character. I like love to fill a room with things that have lived far more life than I ever will. And it's mm-hmm. like cool that like I could look at something and touch something and be like, wow, this has so much experience in it. It's like, whose house has this been in? Who's lived with this? So I do have some IKEA furniture though, and that has no life or character at all. But you know, it's a mix of both.
Okay, Xander, I have a voicemail question for you from Chicago. Mike has a question for you. Okay,
hey Xander, this week we saw Marianne reveal another lesson to be learned about rabbits and mailboxes. It's almost as if she's laying the groundwork for the Survivor Beware Advantage expanded universe. Do you agree? And where do relatives and dead butterflies fit into the SBAEU?
Do you feel like that are all of these advantage phrases part of one universe where there are goats on AstroTurf and broccoli looks like little trees and the rabbits are in mailboxes that are with butterflies flying around?
No, I think that they're definitely working on their world building. Survivor's finally caught on to the big names like Marvel. You know, they're mm-hmm. they're just building up for an end game, a season 50 where it's not Legends, but in fact we get to play against alternate universe who had phrases that were normal to us.
Yes.
Yeah, the multiverse season where, you know, their phrases were like, "I went to go print something at the copy machine." And that's mm-hmm. ridiculous to them, but it sounds completely normal to us.
Do you do a lot of printing at the copy machine?
I guess, yeah, that doesn't make much sense, does it?
It would be very hard to work that into Survivor. I think that would be a pretty good phrase.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually fun. So Ricard, I told him a plan mm-hmm. later on, but it ended up not having any use. I was telling him that if we ever needed to fake another idol, if we both needed to be safe, what I would do is before a challenge, I'd say something ridiculous like, oh yeah, have you ever noticed that potted plants just seem to like crack more easily these days? And then people kind of look at me like, oh my God, does he have another idol?
Yes.
And it'd be interesting, like, is there going to be a player, if they continue to do this, that starts to use that to their advantage, where they just say something mm-hmm. out, like completely wacky, and people are like, oh my God, like, yeah. Does he have an advantage?
Yeah, I was asked about this somewhere of could anybody ever use this like as an offensive weapon to potentially make people think you have the idol? And yeah, potentially if you were sort of like in dire straits where basically you knew you were going to be voted out, almost like a shot in the dark of like, could you say something outlandish on the mat that was like an obvious fake idol phrase? But if nobody else says anything, will they feel like that you have it activated, or is it enough to sort of just get people to maybe split the vote?
Yeah, I think if it's like a last resort, chaos is mm-hmm. always good. So if you want to just go for like complete panic, I mean, Ricard was so panicked that Danny had an
yes.
idol. Even though Danny, you know, there was nothing, no catch to the idol that Danny would have had because he didn't have to say anything. It didn't seem like he had to do anything vote loss related. I'm very curious, like, if that idol, which actually did exist, you know, we saw Danny go right by it when he was searching. I wonder if there were any catches to that one, mm-hmm. if it was just a plain old idol.
What if that thing that you were going to find was, have you say another crazy phrase about printing at the copy machine?
That's actually, I'm glad I didn't find it. There are multiple reasons why I'm glad I didn't find it. It could have been a disadvantage, but the main reason why I didn't find it is because if I wanted to go far, I didn't want anyone to have a Ben argument. Like, you know, Ben, I feel like probably like he could be like a really good player. I mean, he's made it far both times, mm-hmm. but people will always have the argument like, oh, he just used idols. Mm-hmm. So, it, you know, being someone who like was really into the show before and like deep in Survivor Reddit, it's like, oh no, I don't want to be someone who it's like, oh no, he only made it far because of advantages, mm-hmm. which in my case, there were a lot of disadvantages, which kind of helped. But like, if that was an advantage under the bench, it's like, oh, you know, if I get to the end, then it's like, well, he didn't really get to the end on his own merits, which, you know, it's nice to have that. That's what I tell myself when I'm like, you know, crying myself to sleep because I missed the bench advantage.
Yes. Xander, how deep into the Survivor Reddit do you get?
Not at all anymore. Mm-hmm. It was more of just like, I treated it very much like student of the game, Spencer style. Like, I'm going to read every book, which in this case is just Reddit, that there is out there mm-hmm. on Survivor, and just know all. Like, I want to completely like fill up my head with all information I can on the game. So that included like a lot of reading Reddit, watching YouTube videos, Peridium, Island of the Idols, like RHAP, watching interviews with previous players, watching the old seasons back, and just like full sail, like just studying as if I were taking a huge test.
Yes.
So, you know, it was really fun, but honestly, Reddit now, it's like, yeah, I think it's just
say no more. Say less. Yeah, we don't need to have a whole.
We love everybody
yeah. over there.
Yeah.
But Xander, that I'm always interested to know, did you find that helpful where, you know, we do the Survivor Academy podcast that I sort of cater to people that are going to go and play in future seasons? Did you find all that studying to be helpful when you actually were out there?
Yeah, I found it to be really helpful. I think not only in doing things like, you know, like basing some of the thoughts that I had on previous outcomes, but also in the sense that, like, I wanted to do things that people hadn't done before. I wanted to be, like, if you want to be a legend or, you know, and that's, like, of course the dream is to, like, be a Survivor mm-hmm. great. You can't be just like, oh, I want to do this because Tony did it. Like, I want to do the meat shield strategy. You kind of have to forge your own path. So mm-hmm. it was nice to know things that weren't already taken or occupied in that space. Like, I want to do things that are very much Xander decisions. And so, like, some of my decisions were like, well, I don't want to do this just because someone else has done it.
mm-hmm. Xander, I got from a lot of people had a question basically last night. What did Jeff undersell more? Was it the stew or was it the decently sized fish?
Jeff undersold the fish, man.
Did you hear the Marianne last night said Jeff totally undersold the fish?
I caught it. I did. And I, you know, it brought me back. I really did. Stew's like my favorite.
Yeah. Xander, tell me about the stew. Because we talked a lot about the stew on the podcast during season 41. First off, do you know, was stew the person who makes the pizza also the person who makes the stew? Did you find that out?
I'm not sure. I haven't figured it out. And do we even figure out whether it was stew or broth or soup? Like, I guess it is.
Yeah, you would know better than me.
Yeah.
You ate it.
Sure. I think it's one of those things where, like, is a bowl just a bigger cup? Like, once you get into, like, the logistics of thing, like, is jam a sauce? You know?
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of things like that where you can kind of get
it. Well, did you feel like it was stew?
I felt like it was stew, yeah. Like, I would have called that, like, definitely like pot roast or stew. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then do you still remember the big four ingredients?
Yeah, it was hearty potatoes, carrots, onions, and beef.
What about the warm broth? You totally undersold the warm broth.
Warm broth. I mean, I'll never forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this was, let me see if I have the right clip.
By the way, Jeff, you undersold the hell out of that.
Yeah.
It was so good. Hearty potatoes, warm broth, carrots and onions, and that was exactly what we got.
Yeah. Do you think that if we see the Beware Advantage line about the potatoes have skin, I have skin, am I a potato? Is that a shout out to the hearty potatoes?
It could be. Honestly, I really did love that broth. It was the first reward I had gotten since the fish at Yasa. And it was like, it hit home. It was like, it just filled me up warm. Yeah. I was like,
It seemed like it was a raw day. That seemed like that really helped. Like, you know, if it's 110 degrees and they give you a pot of stew, maybe it doesn't hit the same.
Yeah, you know, it was raining that day. It was kind of like one of those, like, feels like a night at home where, like, you got the fire going. You can hear the rain tapping on the window panes outside. And you're just eating, like, a real nice home-cooked meal. That was a good day for me. I was just feeling amazing.
Yeah. What about that fish that they got as a reward last night? Would you constitute that as Xander candy?
I would constitute that as Xander candy. Yeah. Anything that's like meat, veggies, you know, that's fuel for me. And they got a lot of fish. That looked pretty good.
Yeah.
And
was that too much fish for four people?
I think so. I mean, some of that must go bad. I mean, there's no way they're eating all that, right?
Yeah. What do they do? What's the play there?
I guess. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but they showed footage of our fish head. Like a lot throughout the season as like, you know, and funny enough, that was one of my favorite moments on the season was one that like, you know, I saw a big spider out in the jungle. And I was like, oh my God, like I have to get like a camera guy. Like I really want, I want to be able to point to a spider and be like, I showed them that spider for B-roll when someone's doing something duplicitous.
Oh,
show a spider. So I haven't found it yet. If I find it, I will let you know. But there is spider footage that is courtesy of me.
So, I mean, there was a big spider B-roll shot last night. That was not the spider that you saw.
It was not. That one had a green belly. Mine was like black with some white design on it.
Okay. All right. Very, very interesting. I know we saw the baby turtles, but that wasn't technically B-roll.
No. Yeah.
That was more. You were commenting on it. Yeah.
The fish is B-roll. Whenever they do overhead island shots, it tends to be of Yasa, even if it's not even if it's not actually on that beach. And then B-roll, they'll do like lizards sometimes. I love that. Like it's an unnoticed art that like someone has to choose which animal, and like JD's bird, that's probably the best one. I think they might have peaked with JD.
The bird that came
back. Yeah, he came back from the bathroom. They just had. The bird pooping.
That's
above and beyond.
Masterful in terms of the animal shots that they have to choose from. So let's do a question That's from Mel Hulst wants to know, do you think that the lone Tory vote from Roxroy was an intentional plan from the majority to protect against the shot in the dark, especially since Zach played his, or is Roxroy going against the plan or not even being included in it? What'd you think about that Roxroy ultimately says, hey, stick to the plan, everybody. We're voting for Tory.
I think that it's Roxroy going against the grain, but you know, it easily could be a unanimous thing, because you know, now you can't have unanimous votes, because if they're shot in the dark lands, then they get to choose who to send home. So, you know, it easily could have been a smart play. And I think now that's another evolution of the game. Like, no unanimous votes. You need a fallback within your own alliance.
Now, when you say that if the shot in the dark lands, they get to choose who goes home, that's not my understanding of the rules. Is that something that you know?
No. Oh, wait. Yeah, they lose their vote. So that is not how it works.
Okay. So basically, I think that what's happened all season is that I feel like that in these particular cases, it's almost like that the tribe has like always two different options to send home, whether it's Zach or Tory, or in the second vote, you know, Mariah or Marianne. And then in this case, we had where it was Swathi or Tory. It's like, if she does the shot in the dark, you know, we'll just vote out the other one. But I think that maybe Roxroy might have, like, one, he loved Swathi, and two, felt like, okay, well, just in case that shot in the dark hits.
Yeah, I think it was probably more out of, like, admiration for Swathi. I think he just, like, you know, he seems like a real old-fashioned player in the sense that, like, maybe his emotions, like, he doesn't want to vote out someone that he really likes.
Yeah, he's a true old head.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he, I spoke very highly of Swathi in the tribal council. I asked Swathi in the exit interview this morning about just so you know how close her and Roxroy were, and they seemed like they had a really good relationship.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, you know, you got to love like the fatherly role, like telling her that he's proud of her. That was really cute. I love that.
Okay. How about a question from Jay Stahl? Wants to know, what are your thoughts about the online reaction to the season and season 42? When I spoke to Evie a couple of weeks ago, Evie felt like a little bit that like oh, now everybody likes the twists. Are you feeling that way in terms of how season 42 is being received?
Yeah. You know, I actually haven't gotten much feedback on outside reception of 42. I know that I really like it. So far, it's just like a really electric cast. I think that they focus less on explaining the events. That might be where it's coming from. Is like 41 was kind of where they had to explain all these new twists. But 42, they don't have to spend as much time because it's like, oh, you know, we saw this in 41. We know what it's about. So I think the less, like, they're going back to more camp life scenes. They're going back to more scenes that are like strategizing rather than like having to spend a whole episode. Like there was one episode in 41 that was just all advantages, and they don't really have that in 42, which is pretty nice. I think that's why it's maybe better received.
Okay. Let's see. How about a question from, I'm trying to find stuff that we haven't already talked about. We've gotten through so much good stuff. Okay. how about from Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz? If first Jeff undersells the stew and now the fish, do you think that Jeff has lost a step in describing the rewards? Was he just relying on saying all the fixins all the time?
Ooh, I think that Jeff definitely could lean into it more, like really just going out all out and describing it. But it's fun to, you know, like that moment where Zach was able to say his line. I think Jeff's definitely letting the players interact more in terms of like Jeffisms, over describing, saying his catchphrases, which is, you know, it's pretty nice. He's letting us take the reins a little bit.
Yeah. Do you feel like that Survivor is too focused on the, hey, you know, it's 26 days, so we're going to like not really make the rewards that great, and we're going to take away the food because we want people to know at home, just because it's shorter, Doesn't mean it's easy. We're making it as hard as we can make it.
Yeah, I think maybe they might have overestimated people's opinions, because I think early on, I even thought that like other players weren't going to respect us, that it was going to be like, oh, 26 days is just a different game entirely. But it doesn't show up any different on the camera. So I think it's hard for people to gauge how hard it is anyway. Feels the same because you're just watching people and they say they're struggling. They say they're hungry. They say they're exhausted, but you can't really feel it. So yeah. I don't think the audience feels any difference at all.
Would it have been unethical for Survivor just to never even say it's 26 days? Would anybody have known? Would anybody know if it was just
Nobody would have known. It would have been unethical, though, to the fans.
What if, hypothetically, they instead of coming up with days to measure the length of the game, could they have just said, like, sort of like, okay, we're 4% of the way through the game?
Interesting.
The merge happens at the 50% point.
I think hiding the amount of days is just it's bad for the casuals.
So, yeah.
We get to interact with so many super fans. Sometimes it's easier to forget what the casuals think. Mm-hmm. And whenever I like interact with someone who's like, oh, like you're from Survivor, but they're like a very casual fan, they'll be like, do you guys get to stay in hotel rooms at night?
Yes.
And then it's like, okay, clearly there are people who just think it's fake and think it's like hotel rooms. So for that reason, I think it is nice that like, you know, it just depends on which community you interact with the most. All the super fans know it's super real, super grueling. It's not going to show up any different on TV. But for the casuals who don't understand,
it's important for them.
Good for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think in season 43, 44, that they will go back and do a longer season of Survivor? Or do you think the 26 days will be Survivor going forward?
I think it'll be Survivor going forward. But selfishly, I hope not. I really want to... Like I was upset when I heard the news. I wanted to be able to play like the full game, get the true experience. I feel like there's just no going back. Once you make that like one of the hallmark like elements of the game, that, you know, there are really only a couple things that stay the same. It's, you know, if you get the majority of votes, you go home. Each person gets
most
a vote
time,
and
yeah.
39 days. Yeah, I know. I have to watch myself on that, because even that's
not, yeah, you don't know that.
You know, you win a challenge doesn't always mean that, you know, you get to be safe. So, yeah, I'd say that definitely there are a couple things that should just be like untouchable, like commandments. And I think 39 is kind of one of those commandments for the players, not for the audience. Like,
look,
for the
audience, it's a nice number. You got the full experience. Don't say you didn't get the full experience. I mean, they cut out the days you were going to sit around and do nothing. So
that's true.
You all got, you know, the real Survivor experience. I think if I had to guess, I think that, you know, and again, I don't know what the restrictions are in terms of COVID and quarantine and like just how much that has held back the operation. But I suspect they end up sort of splitting the difference in terms of I don't know if we ever go back to a full 39. But I do think that there was probably some fat to cut there in terms of the production schedule. And I wonder if we go to like 30 because it's more of a round number.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably a good happy medium. I mean, you're right. Like, the days that were cut are just down days. I think it's more of just like...
Which are very boring. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which is why, I mean, like, it doesn't have any effect on how the game looks or is played, but more so like just the integrity of like knowing like, oh, I was able to do the 39 days. But yeah, I agree.
Okay. Question for you. Tommy Guam wants to know, you mentioned Jack, of course, podcasts with Bryce and Wendell. I watched him on The Circle. How do you think that he would have done on Survivor, and how would you have done on The Circle?
Oh, I've actually seen this question on one of his stories. So I would not have fared very well on the makeup challenge. I think I would also have floundered and just not have known what to do. I think that's, you know, that's okay. It can be, it's a pass. But Jack loves Survivor. He's done a lot of like Survivor charity events and like playing Survivor. So I'm sure that he's got the knowledge under his belt to play like a real season and do pretty well. I think that, you know, if he could lean into, I think like one of the, like knowing your archetype and leaning into your archetype in some cases can be a really beneficial thing. And he had a pretty good one in the sense that like on the circle, he was like, you know, the cool frat guy. And it's like, if he leans into that, then like, I think you could kind of get by a little easier because people wouldn't see that he's like, you know, he goes to UChicago, pretty brilliant. I think that he could really hide that and it'd be great for him.
Mm-hmm. Does Jack ever get mistaken or misidentified for Nicholas Braun, the actor who plays Cousin Greg on Succession?
He does quite a bit.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. Because I know during the Super Bowl that some people are like, hey, was that Jack from the Circle in that commercial? Like, no, I think it's Cousin Greg from Succession.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, they're occupying like that look. I've never met anyone else. Like they've just got their own niche and it's working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty good. You could catfish as Cousin Greg. Okay. This is a question from Nick Fishman. This is, even though we didn't hear from her at all, do you think that Lydia is going to be loyal ally to High for the rest of the game? What do you think of that duo?
I think so. I think that High's shown himself to play with a lot of integrity and a lot of smarts. I think that people are inclined to work with people who they feel have that sense of integrity. Like he didn't back down. He stood up for Lydia.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, she's going to be pretty lockstep with him. Now, will he stay true to that? I don't know. But, you know, it's definitely nice to find that because it's so hard to trust anyone out there. And it's an exhausting process to constantly doubt whether or not people are actually playing you, whether or not like it's a real alliance and you're also playing people at the same time. It's a whole web of, entanglement to keep track of. Christian Hubicki and I talked about how it's a lot like, edges and nodes for a computer science, network. If you're creating like a social network.
Can you talk about that? So you and Christian talked shop about computer science?
We did. And it was lovely. There are a lot, like you wouldn't think since it's such a social game that computer science would have so many applications, but it really does.
But it does in social networking.
It does, yes. So we had very different views on the type of graph that Survivor would be, because there are multiple different types of graphs. Some of them are weighted, which means that they have different numbers. So like, you know, if my graph, my edge node connection to you, Rob, is a 3, it might be a 5 with Steven, which now, means
is this like when I do a Brant Steele and then the Brant Steele tells me about the alliance strength between people?
I think it might be. That's the Survivor simulation game.
Yes, which is also on a computer, Xander.
Yes. So that's like, yes. So weighted means it's like different values for the relationships that you have. And directional means that you can have different directions. So like, I could be a 5 to you, but you could be a 2 to me. Mm-hmm. And I think like, if you want to simplify it, it's better to just do
Scale 1 to 5?
It could be any scale you want, really. You get to define all the values and all.
Brant Steele, it's 1 to 10.
Gotcha. Okay,
but nobody's ever a 10.
Yeah, nobody's ever a 10. Just you. Mm-hmm. Your relationship with yourself.
Yeah, so that depends on the person. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, true. It should be a 10 for everyone out there. Like, you should definitely have a 10 with yourself.
That's the dream.
Everybody's incredible. So much more capable than you think.
Yes.
If you want to simplify it, I'd say just go with weighted and not directional.
Sure.
But more true to real life is weighted and directional, where like I think our relationship, like my relationship with you is like a 5, but your relationship with me is only a 2. And, you know, sometimes it's nice to try and thank you. Sometimes it is nice to draw it in the sand and like actually figure out
Christian and Gabby did.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like, do you want to play with me? Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite scenes.
It was Marianne's favorite scene. So did you think about this on the island, or this is just like sort of like after the fact you were comparing those two things?
I thought about it on the island, but it's really hard in real life. It definitely helps because it makes you consider like not only thinking about what am I thinking about, what are others thinking about? You know, definitely going into the levels of game theory is super helpful for people familiar with it, with the game. And something that's overlooked is like usually you would try and just know your opponent's level of thinking. Like, and the levels of thinking are like, it starts with just what do I have? And then the next level is what do I know that you have? The next level is what do you know that I have? What do you know that I know that you have? And you can just go up and up and up. But in game theory, if you're too far ahead of someone, you're behind. It like loops back. So
can you explain that? Why is that?
Yeah. So if I'm overthinking and I'm thinking like, oh, what does Rob know that I know about Rob having or knowing? Then I'm way overthinking and I'm going to try and do something that really, if you're on like, you're just like, I'm Rob. I know that I have an idol. But if I'm like overthinking, like, well, what does Rob know? Then I'm going to try and like instigate something or try and play it in a way mm-hmm. where I'm coming off coy and you're just not going to be, you're not going to be having it because you're on level one. And so you're going to end up voting me off. The way now, instead of trying to figure out what level of game theory your opponent's on, I think the better solution is to tell your opponent what level you're on. And they will automatically assume the level above you, and you can just be the level above that. So if you tell someone that, like, yeah, you know, I'm just kind of here enjoying,
like, I'm going to have the idol and I'm going to play it for Evie tonight.
Yeah, exactly. If you're just kind of feeding them a level of like stupidity, then they're going to go the easiest option of just like one level above that. They're like, mm-hmm. oh, we don't have to pay much attention to Xander. He's not that bright. We can just kind of like, you know, we can just push him to the side, discredit him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if then that's your opportunity to just go one step ahead of that because they're not thinking about you anymore.
Well, it's just in your specific advantage of, you're going to tell Liana, we're going to play the idol on Abby. She's one step ahead of you because she's like, okay, well then, so what I'm going to do is take the idol away from Xander. And then you're one step past that because it's like, okay, well, they're going to give the idol to Tiffany. So she can't take the idol from me.
Exactly. And it is really cool to see a lot of these game theory concepts for people who are familiar with them, like brought into actuality. Like I loved Monty Hall and that was so fun that like Deshaun was able to.
Were you the one that said it's the Monty Hall problem? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you knew that when you were out there.
Yes. Yeah, so I love game theory. I love like little logic problems like that. So when I saw it, I was immediately like, oh my God, I know the answer. Like there mm-hmm. is an answer to this. There's an answer where you can get a 66% chance.
Yeah. Now, was it like The Price is Right where is Deshaun looking back to the crowd to say like, all right, what do I do? Like, no, two. Or is it just like complete silence?
I think it was more just like, you know, I think I was the only one who knew the way of the
game. And you're like, oh my God, he blew it.
And I was kind of like, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. He can decide for himself.
Did you want, because you wanted Deshaun to for lack of a better term, to die in that spot.
Yes. Yeah. I definitely did not want him to do.
To do. Yeah. Yeah. Because it would have been better for you, I guess, because I know that you had, you know, a back and forth relationship with Liana, but you felt like that it would have been more beneficial to have her in the game than Deshaun for you at that time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Because really, Danny was immune. Deshaun would have been immune. And that makes the only person to vote out Liana of that alliance. Mm-hmm. And we could have gone for Ricard, but I was a staunch no on Ricard. And in fact, there was a lot of pushback on that.
And you played your extra vote at that tribal council too, right?
Because Erica said that she wanted Ricard gone. And I told her no. I said, right. I'm going to play my extra vote. There's like, I'm not backing down on this.
Yeah.
And I would have gone to rocks for it because I knew that Erica would have flipped on the tie because she wasn't so firm. She kept telling me she's on the fence. She doesn't know exactly like whether it's, you know, a better plan to vote out Ricard or Liana. I wanted Ricard to stay so firmly.
Yeah. But for a second there, you see Deshaun says, hey, I'm keeping my box. And you're like, oh, okay, this is perfect.
Yeah.
No, I got really excited. I was like, oh, I know there's a right answer, and he did not choose the right answer.
Yeah.
And then for me to see him get it right and know that that was like a 1 in 3 and just a raw 1 in 3, it was like, wow, like, impressive. That's pretty awesome.
It was impressive, but yeah, it was the time that the great example of the Monty Hall problem like did not work in that instance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Do you think that we will see that again in season 42?
Ooh, I could definitely see it. I think... a lot of the advantages that were put into play with 41 really didn't end up causing any cool situations. Mm-hmm. Shot in the dark never ended up like having any effect. Similarly, losing your vote at Advantage Island, everybody was privy to what Advantage Island was about before going.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least Yasa was, and then I think the Yasa people just told, Liana told Shan what it was about, and Evie told Deshaun what it was about.
Right.
So nobody ended up losing their vote.
Yeah.
But I'm
even
sure
the idols, if anything, it got Nasir and Shan voted out because they had idols. Played yours at the final five.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
knowledge of power was a big, had some fireworks.
That was a huge one, which is why we might not see that one again. But there's a lot of potential left in how interesting scenarios could play out based off of the advantages in the game.
Well, I think that Do or Die, I feel like I'm sort of like less interested in what happens in season 42. But now that there's been sort of discourse about it, like we talked a lot about at the time of like, could you use knowledge as power if hypothetically you were on the block of like you were somebody who was like potentially like on the outs and had a good chance to get voted out. It's like all of a sudden, like if I have a 1 in 3 or like 50-50 chance at getting up to a 66% chance of being safe, I should jump at the Do or Die.
Yes. And that was actually, I thought it was going to be something that would happen consistently after that first appearance of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was ready, knowing the answer, to game the system, because 66% chance is, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
If you know to switch, that's a decent chance at survival. So I was ready and willing if it was going to be some kind of like nail biting, like, oh my God, like, I want someone to stay in, or I want to stay in and I'm worried I'm on the outs. You just tell them, hey, switch your answer and you've got a 2 out of 3 chance.
Could you imagine if the whole show was Do or Die every single week?
I think it gets you tired pretty fast.
It's a lot. It would be a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a lot. And it would just be really unfortunate for someone's game to end not by being voted out, because there is a certain, like, I think the worst way to go is like not being a target anyway, just being like a throwaway vote. Because at least if you go out as like, oh, we have to get them, then it's kind of cinematic. It's kind of like, oh, wow, like, nice, I was targeted. So in like the Do or Die scenario, it's like, oh, wow, like, you just, that's it.
Yeah. We started talking about High and Lydia, that I'm more interested to know what you think about how High, I thought, did such a good job, but basically these last couple episodes, really the whole season, by picking up Mike, which I thought was so interesting, where I think all last week we talked about like, okay, well, who's going to be able to get, is it going to be Daniel? Are they going to stick with him? Is Chanel going to be able to throw Daniel under the bus? And then is Chanel going to get back in there? But what I did not see coming was that here you have Mike, another person who was also sort of blindsided by what went on at that tribal council, and now here's Mike as the third partner with High and Lydia.
Yeah, I think this is a beautiful example of putting your ego aside.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple people on my season who, when they were voted for, like, refused to work with that person who voted for them. I think that's just so foolhardy. Like, you can't just rule people out because they voted against you once. There's so many things that go into a vote. And if you're able to put your ego aside and say, hey, I know we haven't been on the same terms for the game, but like, we can work together now, then that's a huge advantage on your end, because, it shows that, one, you're willing to work with people, and it's like no doors closed. That's very much my policy, is like, never keep any doors closed. And there's a fallback to that, is that, people feel more hurt by you if you're kind of like, hey, yeah, of course I'll work with you. Yeah, I'll keep this door open. And then you end up voting for them. You know, they could be angry with that, but at the same time, it's good for longevity in the game because you never know where your next opportunity is going to come from. And if you're always looking and you're always keeping your doors open, then they could present you with a plan that you actually love.
Yeah, that's how I like to think about the game also in terms of like trying to keep all options open at any specific time. And you could certainly get yourself into trouble with that as well, where people might feel that you're wishy-washy. One of the things that I thought was interesting was a question that goes back to your season, where after that vote that you talked about, where we saw Tiffany go home, where Nasir was very upset with Heather, and you talked about how that Nasir was a name that was said to you before the name Heather came up to you and you voted for Nasir, where Nasir was mad at Heather because he got votes. And Heather said, hey, I didn't vote for you. And Nasir said, but you were telling people to vote for me, but I didn't vote for you. And it was a question of which is worse. And I think that's sort of like the same sort of question that Lydia and Hai are sort of wrestling with Daniel and Chanel, of the Daniel wrote Lydia's name down, but Daniel's trying to say, but Chanel told me to write it down. But Chanel's like, I didn't write it down. I didn't write down Lydia's name, which is worse.
No, exactly. I think people get really hung up on writing your name down. Mm-hmm. I think that doesn't really mean that much. You know, if someone writes your name down, it could just be a part of, like, again, the entropy of survivors, that people gravitate towards something that's like easier. So if you're told, hey, everybody's voting for Lydia, then it's really easy to be like, all right, that's the name. You know, he doesn't have to have a vendetta against her. And that was a lot of the case. That was the case in some of the votes that I had too, you know, like, vote for Liana in her boot episode doesn't necessarily mean that I like have a vendetta against Liana. Just means that at the time it's like the best option and something that people are willing to go with. That's a bad example because there were really few people able to be voted out. But like maybe I'd say after the merge, writing Deshaun's name down that's a great example. Like I had no beef with Deshaun, but it was like something that people were willing to write down. So if we were willing to write his name down, then like, of course I'm going to go with that. When I don't really have any like hard feelings, like I'm not angry with Deshaun. I'm like, he has to go. Mm-hmm. It's more of just like convenience and people agree. So why change it? So I don't think writing your name down is necessarily like the end all be all. But like coming up with the plan, that's probably worse.
What did you think last week about Daniel and the predicament that he was in at that tribal council? Did you think that he made the right call?
Yeah, I mean, like in right call in terms of his vote or in terms of how he played the situation in general?
I just would love to hear your thoughts on all of it.
Yeah. I'd say something, if he was going to flip to Jenny and vote her out, you do it before it goes to discussion.
Yeah.
You just do it quietly. Because I think he was saying that he wasn't going to go to Rocks. So he knew he wasn't going to go to Rocks. What did he expect was going to happen? That Hai was going to flip his vote? Hai really didn't know what was going on in terms of who was able to vote. And, you know, because Daniel's the only person who has all the information. Daniel knows that Hai's going to vote and Daniel's going to vote.
Yeah.
So on the re-vote, Daniel knows it's going to tie again. But if you're not going to go to Rocks, like, why chance Hai being, you know, I mean, maybe he thought that he could convince Hai, which is, you know, that's definitely an option. But if you're going to, if you think that there's even a chance that you're going to vote, Yeah, it was Jenny. If you think that there's even a chance that you're going to vote Jenny out, then I say you do it quietly, do it without a show, and do it without like throwing your allies under the bus. You just, on the revote, you vote Jenny, and then everybody's kind of confused, and you go back and you say, yeah, I didn't want to go to Rocks.
And I want to just go back to the Ika tribe where we started this conversation. And did you feel like that the Ika tribe made the right decision to vote out Swathi instead of Tori?
It depends on whose perspective you're looking at. I definitely think Swathi, like, you know, young people are dangerous if they can camouflage themselves as being young, because it's certainly something that people will dismiss you for, but it doesn't make you any worse of a player or any like bigger of a backstabber. You could just as easily be like a huge villain if you're young. So I think that it depends on whose perspective. I think that Swathi's like pretty brilliant. She seems to be like very capable. I'm sure she'd be just as, you know, strategic and backstabbing and willing to throw her allies under the bus as Tori is. Tori's definitely been way more outspoken about it. She's like, it's just me. I'm like, nobody's worth keeping around. Tori definitely seems like she's in it for herself, which is how everybody should be and how everybody should think of other people as. It's always funny to me that people do get like, at a certain point, it's like you kind of sign up knowing about blind sides. So it's mm-hmm. it's always like such a shock. But at the same time, like, I think some people's egos let them think like it was never going to be me. When like I kind of came on the show knowing that like this is what I signed up for. I'm probably going to get like my heart crushed and I'm going to be broken and blindsided. I'm ready for
all of the above.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you go in knowing that, I think it's definitely better. Because I never had any illusion of like, oh, like this is my destiny. Like I'm going to make it to the end. When I got there, I was like really appreciative. And of course, like everything about being on Survivor was like, it's an honor to be here. Just to be able to play is like such a miracle. Like I'm going to take in every second and try and enjoy my surroundings and just like appreciate this for what it is.
One last thing on young people playing Survivor. Do you think that there is a thing about where young people play and the older players look at them as like, hey, you know, little brother, little sister, we're looking out for you. And then if that younger person is ever exposed as, wait, you were double dealing, as we saw with Swathi, but we've seen it in the past with, say, like a Will Wall. We've seen it even like a JD to some extent last season. It's almost like, okay, now you have to go. Whereas if a young person comes in and doesn't necessarily play up the sort of like little brother, little sister as much, then I feel like that there is a little bit more room for forgiving them if they are being a bit more duplicitous.
Yeah, I think so. I think like trying to hide your youth definitely is going to mean that people are going to be less upset. But again, like young people don't tend to go very far. So I think if you're not going to lean into it, it could also be a, a pitfall for you. I think that's like the curse of being a young person on Survivor is like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you lean into it, you could go far camouflage. But if you get caught and you backstab, people are going to be doubly pissed. If you don't lean into it, people know you're young. They don't think you deserve the money because you're not going to spend it well. You know, there's always a sense of entitlement, like, oh, well, they haven't even lived. They don't know, like, you know. So I think that, like, yeah, it's pretty, you're screwed either way. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't discourage any young people from playing because I think that, you know, there's always a chance. And it's at the same time, like, such an incredible, like, shaping opportunity. Definitely, you got to know yourself before going in. That's like, you know, one of the young people thing that like I would say watch out for the most is like you got to know yourself because like any big event, you're going to change a lot, but you want to be able to like still stay somewhat consistent afterwards. You can't just be like all over the place. But yeah, like I'd say that it was like an incredible experience for me. No regrets at all. I like loved how I played. And as long as like, you know, my greatest advice for anyone who's going to play is that like, know yourself and know that like people are going to say things, but like the only opinion that you got to listen to is your own. You just got to be out there playing for you and you alone. Because then when the comments start rolling in and, you know, you're worried about what people think or people are talking negatively, I mean, you know, everybody's always got something to say and it doesn't always have to do with you. Sometimes people are insecure about themselves, but you know, at the end of the day, if you made yourself happy, then that's all that matters.
Okay. Well, Xander, I greatly enjoyed this conversation, talking shop with you here today. Is there anything else that you want to say about Survivor 41, 42, beyond?
You like the season so far?
I really enjoyed the season so far. I think that all the episodes have been really strong. You know, again, another great cast of Survivor. So, yeah, it's been a really fun start to 42.
Yeah. All right. Awesome.
Xander, where can people keep up with you?
People can keep up with me. It's been interesting because, like, I was like a very big, I love the artistic side of Instagram. Like, I like, you know, doing fun posts and like, it's kind of a fun little game. But now that I do have like a following, it's almost like there's some
too
sort
much
of,
pressure.
Yeah. There's a lot, and it stopped being fun, which like immediately I'm the kind of person that like, I do things like I don't spare any expense on my happiness. Like I choose happiness always. So like if it's going to be something that's like stressful, then I'm like, cut it out, you know? So
protect your peace, Xander.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, you know, and I'm much more of a private person. That was my one like fear of going on Survivor. Like I like being like private. I like being, you know, kind of, you know, just my own lone wolf out there and independent. But honestly, like I'd say Instagram is probably the best place. I don't use Snapchat anymore. I don't use Facebook. Instagram.
Okay. All right. Well, Xander, best of luck with the app. I hope that we can do this again sometime because I really enjoyed getting to hear your thoughts on this season and your season, of course. Don't be a stranger.
Yeah, totally. This was awesome. Thank you so much, Rob. This is like, you know, dream checked off the list.
Oh, happy to do it. Xander, thank you again, okay?
All right. Have a great day, Rob.
You too. All right, everybody, there you have it. Xander Hastings here on the podcast. I thought that Xander did a really great job, and I think that he had a lot of interesting things to say about both this season and season 41. Really glad that we were able to get Xander on the show to talk about everything, and I really enjoyed getting the chance to talk to him. Xander was a young guy, went through a lot in season 41 and didn't really have a bad word to say about anybody that he played with. I thought he handled himself with a lot of maturity all the way through season 41, and happy to have him here on the podcast and hope that we get to hear from him more in the future. Of course, you'll get to hear more from me in the future when I come back for the Survivor Feedback Show this week, and we'll be answering your feedback questions and looking at all of the Survivor social media, which has been very fun to do all season. We'll be doing that with Ali Lasher. Get your feedback questions in. Of course, make sure you're subscribed to our Survivor podcast feed to make sure you get all the other Survivor coverage that we have coming your way this week. And then, of course, I'll see you for the patrons of Robinson Podcast, brand new month. Head on over and check out what I have to say on this week's edition of The Academy with Matt Scott. It was a very busy weekend, of course, WrestleMania, and then also making time for The Academy. That's it for the patrons of Robinson Podcast at robinsonwebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.